comments, but for anybody else who wants them, there are copies on the table in the back corner. There?
Right here.
Right. 15-minute breaks will not always make 45 minutes. In the future, but we, this was very clearly an opportunity for the committee to meet one another and some of the staff and a number of people in the room. And I've noticed that we've had some changing faces and, before we actually launch into this session, for each of the visitors, we've had I believe a sign-up sheet or, some other mechanism for us to find out who's come and gone. But I think it would be perhaps helpful to the people at the table just to know who's around the room. And so I'm going to just stop for a moment before we begin and ask people to briefly identify themselves by name and where you're from. Deb?
My name is Dan Cork, and I am a research associate with the Committee on National Statistics.
My name is Drew Richardson. I'm an agent with the FBI. We're here just now in custody.
I'm Larry James of the Medical Sciences Division of DOE Monitoring and Research Grant with the National Academy.
Jim Murphy, I'm formerly with the FBI. I work as a consultant to the Department of Justice on Congress night.
I'm Peter Kirchner. I'm a faculty member at the University of Iowa. I'm a physician, but I'm on loan to DOE, and I work in the Medical Sciences Division, assisting Larry with the review of the program.
I'm Mark Zaid. I'm the executive director of the James Madison Project. It's a national security nonprofit group. I'm also a private attorney representing 11 individuals suing the federal government over pre-employment polygraphs.
My name is Bill Ganelli. I'm an FBI agent assigned to the FBI polygraph program.
Ken Scholl with the FBI polygraph program.
Anne Reed, the Department of Energy. I'm the FBI representative.
Libby Hansen, Department of Energy.
John Solomon, retired CIA polygraph examiner.
Jay Lehern, the chief of the Air Force polygraph program.
Oh, so that's another one that we... And where is it located?
Just here as a spectator today.
Now, but where is the Air Force polygraph program?
Our headquarters is located at Andrews Air Force Base. We work for the Air Force Office of Special Investigation.
Okay, we just need to continue to make notes about things like that.
I'm Caroline Barnes, the acting director of the Office of Counter Intelligence at the department, and I'm actually detailed from the FBI into that position. And it's our office, even though I haven't had to speak so far, since I'm not an expert myself, that is actually responsible for the counterintelligence contract program. Dave Rempel and the work.
I'm Dave Kramer, editor of Science and Government Report.
Tom Harper, Department of Energy, director of the cyber program, counterintelligence.
Jack Cowan, I'm also with the Air Force Polygraph Program, A4 also here.
Robert Peters, I'm an employee of CIA.
Alan McQuarrie, I'm an applied tech at Michigan at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab.
I'm Stephanie Grimes. I'm the program manager from the Department of Energy of the Accelerated Access Authorization Program, which you elected to polygraph.
I'm Winnie Lehman. I'm the Department of Energy representative to the U.S. Security Policy Board staff. It's an interagency group that looks at national security.
I'm Doug Hinckley from the DOE's Office of Counterintelligence.
Thank you. So we're actually almost close to the original schedule here. The purpose of this session is for the panel to hear from a number of those especially associated with government agencies and related programs about the uses of polygraph in the government context, how it's administered, how the data are used. And in particular, we've invited three people here today to make brief presentations. There will be discussion, what I think we'll do is ask each of them in turn to make presentations and have committee questions after each presentation. So, let me begin with on my list is Andy Ryan, who's Chief of Research of the DOD Polygraph Institute.
Good morning, thank you. We have prepared what I hope will be a brief PowerPoint presentation so that you can see some of the statistics that we use in the DOD to assess the accuracy of polygraphs. But most importantly, I thought what I would try to do today is provide for the panel a very brief overview of the Institute itself and how we operate. And I think you've already heard from me in the past, and extend that invitation for each of you to visit the Institute. It's in Columbia, South Carolina. It's a relatively short hop from here, not too bad, and unfortunately it's not a whole lot warmer than Washington right now. But normally it's a little bit warmer. We could begin the PowerPoint. This is the second slide in the PowerPoint. A DOPHI itself, and I'm going to refer to it if I can with the acronym. DOPHI is the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute. That simply means that following Joint Security Commission, the government has attempted to centralize and consolidate the training and research programs for all polygraph interests in the federal government. The Polygraph Institute itself has been located now in three different cities and three different locations, primarily in the southeast. It began back in the 1950s in a program called USAMS, which was located at Fort Gordon in Georgia. That moved and expanded to Fort McClellan in the state of Alabama, and most recently moved to South Carolina in 1999 as part of the base realignment and closure issues in the government where bases were being closed. Fort McClellan was closed down, so they had to find a new home. It's my understanding that the Polygraph Institute primarily exists inside of the military base because it provides very cheap rent. As well as you'll hear momentarily, it provides us with what would be referred to in a university setting as our subject pool. We use troops that are on the base as the subjects or participants in some of our studies as well as our training. The Institute, and again I extend the invitation, is now, I guess, because of the move, allowed us to build a very state-of-the-art Institute. The Institute has a research division, which I will speak to, and this is under my direction right now. We have a quality assurance program, which was, again, the result of the Joint Security Commission recommendations in 1994, which go all the way back to OTA of 83, which I just cited. The examiner training program was also, from the earlier, a result of the recommendations of the Joint Security Commission to standardize and have oversight of the federal government's polygraph programs, as well as the quality of training of our examiners. So, in the beginning, go to the next slide, please. The Institute is now considered the single and sole source for initial polygraph training for the federal government. I've already heard questions about the differences here between the federal government polygraph programs and commercial polygraph programs. And it should be noted that the federal programs have not been under, I guess, the severe criticism that the commercial programs came under back in the early 80s. We were not cited for abuse, and you'll hear from Dave Grinselman later, and I hope you take him up on his invitation to see the program. It's one of the best in the country, and we can attest to that because we are the ones charged with inspecting the programs. DOPHI, in addition to being the single training resource, and this means that we have a 14-week basic course. We're not supposed to call it basic anymore. It is just the course. It is taught at a master's level. It is taught by a combination of PhDs and master's level people supervised by PhDs, and has met or is in the process of meeting accreditation standards with Middle States accreditation. We provide as well as part of our program the continuing education division,
and we have more than 15 advanced courses in polygraph topics that are taught by the staff and adjuncts that we hire from the All federal polygraph examiners, and we actually call them PDD examiners, just a little easier to say, and I guess we in the government love acronyms, so it's quicker to say it as well. They're also held to a standard of recertification. They're required to have 80 hours of continuing education credit every 2 years. The continuing education unit is also located at downtown. Each agency within the federal government, each of the agencies that has law enforcement charges as well as intelligence charges, all have polygraph programs. The ones that have polygraph programs are inspected by the John Pye's Quality Assurance Program. This is an independent inspection where our folks who are experienced examiners go out and assess whether or not the programs themselves are adhering to the federal standards. And the standards are something I think that the community probably want to have access to see how we control this field. These standards do exist, and we're in the process right now. ASTM is revising the standards for polygraph administration, not just in the federal government, but in the commercial industry as well. Next slide, please. There are currently 24 federal agencies that we provide support to, and that support is in training and research in the quality assurance and education areas. 11 of our agencies, and I've tried to list all of them, and hopefully you can understand the acronyms, but we'd like to spell them out for you. 11 of our agencies currently conduct security screening examinations, which is the interest of this study. Each of the agencies have, as you might imagine, different missions, different reasons for being, different charges from the Congress and how they carry out their business. And so the exams that they administer, which the examiners working for all the agencies receive the same standardized training at DOT-5, but may, because of agency requirements or policies, may actually have different formats that they use as their primary instrument. Next, please. The growth of polygraph, if we go back 20 or 30 years, you probably see in terms of numbers that the majority of polygraph examiners in the world exist right here in the United States. All of the instruments that are built for polygraph were built here in the United States. In the past 10 years and probably for the next 25 years, we're going to see an exponential growth of examiners as well as programs. We now know of at least 68 countries that have polygraph capability. We know of at least two other countries that are building their own instruments. Very similar to the ones used here, but we don't really know whether it does this for itself. So it's not an industry that's shrinking by any means. I think most countries around the world recognize that there is certainly a utility for the use of polygraph and have relied on their own evidence as well as the evidence produced by the federal government here as to the validity and utility of the program itself. The students that come to DOT-5. The students from DOT-5 primarily are federal employees. Some of these employees are brought into the federal government specifically to become polygraph examiners or PDD examiners. These ladies and gentlemen are brought in a lot of cases not too long after graduation from college and are trained with that specific mission in mind. All of our students are required to have a minimum level of baccalaureate degree. I'll speak in a minute about our master's level program. We also accept on occasion with special permissions and the modification of the courses, of course, content, law enforcement officers from local and state agencies. We are teaching a course in Columbia right now where we have two local law enforcement agents involved in the class. This is just a testimony to some of our local police agencies we'd rather have the higher quality standard training. The only things that they are not taught are the things that do not apply to the programs that they go back to. They might not actually be there to learn some of the test formats that we need in the federal government, so they're excluded from those. I might also add that the students, after they leave DOT-5, have to go into an internship program. That internship program is monitored by their supervisors in the field as well as DOT-5. They are very similar to graduates in university programs going out. They have a supervisor, they
to conduct a certain number of exams before they're given their final certification and allowed to practice in the program. We are mentioned that we are seeking regional accreditation. We have recently hired a dean of education at Dunpine. Her major task for the moment is to meet and comply with the standards. We thought at one time the SACS accreditation, because we're located in the southeast, but it appears maybe because of our headquarters that we're going to go through middle state. This regional accreditation process, I guess you'd say, will probably be the self-reflection stage right now. We've turned over all the documentation. I sit on many of the committees for that and sat on the committees before Dean Johnson was brought in. We also have an articulation agreement with the university in this area to provide students who graduate from DOCPI credit towards a master's degree in forensic psychology. We are looking at this as an interim step because our long-term goals in the institute in terms of education is to provide a full master's degree program within the institute for our agents. Now, the curriculum at DOCPI, and again, you're welcome to, since we have a course active in South Carolina right now, we teach somewhere between 3 and 4 courses per year. There are 14-week programs, very intense. You are invited to observe the course, see the laboratories that the students are trained in, see how they're taught. It is a much better facility than we've had in the past. Every student is being supervised by a seasoned polygraph examiner. Many of our examiners are employees of DOG, but many are also assigned to us from our sister agencies. And this is, I guess, adds to the quality of the program. We can always bring in the best. The curriculum is high five. The lesson plans, as they are being reviewed by Middle States and others for the accreditation process, they're finding out that the curriculum there is based upon research. I'm here representing, I guess, the Federal Polygraph Research Program, but I'm relatively new into the federal government, so I'm going to try to give you as much of an overview as I can, but I'm sure you will find when you start to kind of dive into this, the research is in some cases questionable, and certainly there's not as much as we would all like to have to make some of the decisions. The curriculum changes that occur there, when and if we modify the curriculum, the training that the examiners receive, it must be backed up by research findings. So unlike the early days in the 1950s when the school was located at Fort Jackson, and I guess we would have to say the school or the training was basically governed and controlled by the folklore of the polygraph industry, now it's driven by research. Next, please. And I'm just going to note here that in a recent Supreme Court case, DOCPI was cited in Schaefer as being the best best training for polygraph in the United States. Next, a little bit about our quality assistance program. And I mentioned earlier that this was a result, or somewhat of a result, of the Joint Security Commission recommendations in 1994. The quality assurance program has developed a federal examiner's handbook. This is sort of the BSM of the polygraph examiners. They go out and they have to apply the rules and regulations of the examiner's handbook in their practice. Compliance is required with that, and that's part of the QAP's program or their mission. They stay on the road constantly inspecting our agencies and filing reports back to the agency heads as well as to our department. Each agency is inspected on a biannual basis, and that primarily is because of the number of agencies and small staff, and the inspections, I think, in terms of the schedule that are determined by our executive committee within the polygraph program as well as the advisory committee. Next. What do? They inspect for standards of quality. One of the concerns in any practice similar to polygraph, where it's an interaction between two human beings and an instrument is used to make diagnostic or investigative decisions, there's always the concerns about inter-rater reliability, about examiner skills and competency, and we have the standards established in the quality assurance program that's out there to ensure that these are adhered to. It is a 100% independent review. As a matter of fact, DOCPI is doing its own inspection right now, so not only do we inspect our programs, but we have to allow ourselves to be inspected as well. Next. like to also provide you with a little bit of an overview of the discipline as it exists today. And I think you're going to hear this over and over, the older studies that have investigated polygraphs in terms of its validity, reliability, or utility have relied on a dearth of evidence, and they've also relied on old evidence, mostly relied on specific issue testing, which is, what most people commonly look at as the polygraph exam, where we simply ask you, did you do it? And that becomes what we call a specific issue or a single issue exam. That seems nice and clean because you're after one answer. You want to know if the person was involved or did they commit the crime. Unfortunately, when you expand that into the screening world, we have what we call multiple issues. And so case rates go wild. We don't know what the exact base rate is when we have a different base rate for every question we ask. The discipline is very complex, and OTA recognizes that in 83. So I'm looking forward to this as a committee coming up with some of the answers, or at least revising it and kind of find some of the answers that we've been looking for as well. So let me talk about the research division, if I can, and primarily where we're going, what we're trying to do. Our mission is mandated by Congress. We have three primary objectives in the research division. We are to evaluate the validity of PVD techniques. That means all of the training, all of the ways that we ask the questions, the test formats, the scoring processes, the outcome effects is really what we're trying to assess now, and I'll speak to that a little bit later. We're also charged with investigating or knowing about countermeasures and anti-countermeasures, developing them. This, for the most part, in this form, is considered classified information, and so that we have to have get access to that some other media. We're also required to look at new instrumentation. I think what you're calling it here in this proposal is alternative methods, and I want a little clarification because I was confused earlier when I think someone asked about alternative methods and. And maybe it was alternatives that are adjunct to polygraph in the current process. Where we're looking at new instrumentations, we're looking at emerging technologies. Can we use the FMR? Can we use ELPs? Can we use voice and face and those kinds of things to either enhance the process itself, add to the number of physiological channels we use, or move upstream, as I think, which is our ultimate goal. We're also charged with looking at analytic methods, and I'm excited to hear some people ask, can you suggest different ways? We have been searching for parametric procedures to look at categorical data, and if we can get some help in the data, we certainly welcome that. And Mr. Chairman, if you'd like data, we have CDs full of data, and we'd love for you to submit a proposal.
My graduate student will be ecstatic. She's waiting for me to come back and report.
I would invite her to visit the webpage. We have dissertation support, we have master's level support, and we have institutional support as well. And I won't get into how much support right now. Next, please. Our goals for our mission, and our goals, when I'm speaking of these are the goals under my direction. So we have a common interest here. I think if you review some of the past findings, these are some of the issues that seem to have been unresolved for a number of years. We would love to have a consensus theory between the practical community of polygraph examiners and those who have to apply this and the scientific and academic communities who should be guiding our curriculum and our training and how we do the process itself. We are making, I think, great strides right now to increase our credibility of polygraph and its research within the academic and scientific communities, and this primarily is through partnership arrangements. One of the advantages of moving to Fort Jackson in Columbia, South Carolina, and this in no way takes away from the state of Alabama, but as I understand it, when the search was undertaken for a new location, short of moving to the metro D.C. area where it would have been a bit expensive compared to South Carolina for what we need to do, they were asked to locate a military base where they would also be co-located with a research university and medical school. We have both of those facilities in Columbia, South Carolina, and have established partnership with them in the short time that we've been there. University of South Carolina acts as our institutional review board. It was was my decision early on that if we were going to have our project review, we're going to have the work we do review. We did have a human use committee or an internal institutional review board in Alabama, but it was internal to the military base. It's my feeling that this should be an external board, and we have established that relationship within every project that we support, every project that we conduct at DOTI or for DOTI for the government has to receive that blessing before we can begin. The committee is holding us to the same standards as the university, the faculty there. We are also trying to answer this vision or complete this mission by increasing the breadth of the research topics. You have addressed in your proposal that you will be looking at some of the other methods, and we're excited about that as well. We do have products for you to look at. We have studies that we have conducted at DOTI in the past looking at voice analysis, the voice technologies. We are in the midst of some of the newer wave or new emerging technologies now that we've provided those to you as well. As we move away from the simple, what used to be called lie detection, the psychophysiological detection of deception, into the correlate of deception, I think we would probably get a more satisfactory answer as to how it can be used properly. We are interested in developing new technologies. I think I see the role of DOTI's Institute for Research Mission there is to develop the technique and then let somebody else put into a smaller box for us. I can't imagine at this point in time how we would ever go magnet into a briefcase and get an agent to go out and conduct an exam. But, you know, we'll leave that to NASA possibly. Some of our major focuses right now, and this is primarily dependent on the amount of funding and resources we have to develop these kinds of research projects, look at brain mapping. We are going to move upstream, as they say. We understand that the autonomic nervous system provides us with a lot of physiological information. We think that we could probably continue for another 50 years tweaking that process and the analysis that we use of the autonomic nervous system, but let's face it, we're tweaking for a couple of percentage points here or there. We would like to make some major advances. And if we can develop the relationship between the brain activity, the cognitive activity, and the autonomic nervous system, I think we'll have a better answer. We're also interested in enhancing or continuing to enhance our examiner skills. Like any profession, there is, and I'll take the luxury of expanding this word, there are clinical skills involved here. We spend a great deal of time in the training of our examiners, talking to them about how they build rapport with the clients, with the subjects, talking to them. I think once you've had a chance to visit the DOE program, you'll come away with the feeling that you were treated, as I heard yesterday, as royalty. It's not something to fear. The counterintelligence polygraph screening is so blatantly simple up front, with just asking questions, are you loyal to the United States government and the United States government only? In the DOE situation, there's an obvious reason why we ask those questions. A little bit more, please, about how DOTI and the research division operates. I have as my main advisory committee a scientific review committee. On this committee, we have standing representatives from the law enforcement communities within the federal government, as well as the intelligence. In addition to that, we have a number of scientists from across the country that sit on this review committee on a rotating basis. Many of these members are past presidents of the Society for Psychophysiological Research. We are expanding that committee almost yearly. In fact, we have our next meeting next Wednesday in Tallahassee, Florida, Florida State University will be hosting. I look to this advisory committee to do a lot of things for this. One, they advise me on the strategic plan. What projects do we undertake? What has the most promise for the future? What alternative technologies should we be looking at? Because we are spending tax dollars. They also act as reviewers. Every project that we support and or conduct by DOTI must undergo external reviews like any other peer review the referee journal would require. So they act as either reviewers in some cases, or they advise us and provide us with a list of people who can review. They come from a diverse background. These are not necessarily scientists who are dedicated to polygraph. As a matter of fact, the latest representative on the panel is someone who was a professor of mine many years ago, and and I saw him as somebody who could challenge almost any concept or construct. And he provided a lot of good questions for us, and we'll continue to do so in the future, I'm sure. We are, and would accept recommendations from this panel, this committee, as well as the DOE scientists, looking for an additional member. We had someone who retired and rotated off this past year, and we need to replace that person. Next, please. Back up one. Sooner or later, you're going to start seeing and hearing about the issues that that people who do research in polygraph are concerned with and some of the obstacles that they constantly run into. This is not meant to tell you anything that you don't already know. We conduct lab studies, affectionately called mock crimes. We ask our subjects, our participants, to actually become a criminal for a period of time, let it prove that it can be used. No deception except that the informed consent tells you exactly everything you're going to do and be ready to tell you what you've just done. The advantages of laboratory types of experiments with mock crimes is obvious. We absolutely know ground truth. We are programming the participants to do or not to do what we might call to be. Now, the weakness, of course, is it's very difficult once you start to read the studies that have been conducted in the past as well as or some of the things that we're doing. There are probably an infinite number of variables that are difficult to control for you. I will be speaking to you just a moment about a project that we begin next week and trying to describe how we're trying to answer as many of these problems as we possibly can. Field studies, as in all disciplines, provides you the best evidence. The problem with the field studies is that we don't know the rates. We don't absolutely know the base rate. So these are very common issues that we face as well as many other disciplines. I would ask you to become cognizant of the difference between our specific issue test and our multiple issue test because it also brings in some additional problems. Next. This is a list, and I thought I would add this because this is a list that has probably 100% correlation with recommendations that came from OTA in 1983, as well as some of the problems I've been discussing here today. We have to understand, in the context of the exam, what is the purpose of the exam. That's one of the issues in establishing its validity and its utility. We have to understand the setting in which the polygraph exam is administered. Well, in a criminal setting, things seem to be a little cleaner and obvious. In the personnel screening or the county intelligence screening, it's a little fuzzier. Format. We're going to become, I guess, intimately involved with the formats. What these formats are, in terms of giving you an analogy, are the test instruments, the MMPIs, the CPIs, the diagnostic tools that our examiners are trained to use. And just as in any other diagnostic approach, we have a number of these tools available to our examiners. The examiners, depending on, again, on agency mission, will use or choose a certain format to use as their primary screener, the first level, I guess you would say, of the diagnostic approach. This is much like going to your medical, your physician, your GP, and having a stress test to see if you have heart condition or a problem. If there is an identification of an issue there, then we immediately go to the next format, the next level of sensitivity. We then look for something a little more sensitive, and we direct it to the issue of concern. I'm sure that we could spend the rest of the day talking about the formats, but in general, it mimics or it follows the diagnostic methods of the mental health profession as well as the medical profession. And we try to develop formats, techniques, tools that can be used to, depending on the mission, have either a very high false positive rate in the beginning, which is intentional to try and make sure that we are not having any false negative rates, and the government has a concern primarily in the false negative area. We would even suggest that if there were no polygraph exam, the false negative rate would be 100%. Certainly unacceptable for most citizens living in the United States. The other two issues, which I think is, again, I'm mentioning that when you have a didactic environment, we have to be concerned about the examining as well as the examiner. We do everything we can to control the examiner's quality through our training, through the standardization of our training, through the quality assurance programs, through the number of levels of supervision and quality assistance that they have in the field. You will see from the and a later presentation, how the polygraph exam is not something that is a simple result of the physiological recordings and makes a decision. It's basically information that is given to direct investigative resources are to then be reviewed by quality assurance people. Every exam is reviewed in the federal government by a supervisor, and then a decision is made before it goes on for further review. It's not as straightforward as science would want it to be, so it again creates some more issues in terms of how many variables are we trying to measure at one time.
Next. Excuse me, I'm keeping an eye on the clock, and I know we have other people here. We're going to give copies of this, I hope, to everybody else, and everybody's probably going to want to come and visit, so
okay.
If you feel free, we'll get on to everybody else and come visit here.
I'll do my best, trying to wrap it up in a minute or two. One of the issues that I think is most important to my division, and I hope will become apparent to this committee, is following the Joint Security Commission in 1994, where the recommendation was made to consolidate all research and training into one institute. Prior to 1994, the federal government had 20 full-time polygraph researchers. Since the Joint Security Commission, we have five. And all five were located at Dodge, and not to belabor the fact, but most of the talent is brand new. Because of the move, we lost some of our senior scientists and have been replaced with assistant professor level high school veterans and scientists. Okay, we'll speed it up a little bit. Next, please. This is just an example of some of the applied projects that we are currently involved in, and I won't go into detail on all of these. Certainly, you're welcome to review all these. These are projects that are either being conducted at Dodd-Pyre or being supported by Dodd-Pyre. The primary mission of our applied projects is simply this. We need to improve our sensor technology. We're looking at how do we record the information that we're collecting, and is there a better, is there a less invasive, is there a more comfortable way to measure this? We're looking at the automation of some of the processes that we do. We have a tremendous investment in the algorithms that are developed by Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Labs, who has already been cited in your reference material. We continue to develop these algorithms. They're based on our data that we have. We're also very interested in the signal analysis. We are looking at and have projects out now where we're trying to discover, is there a better way to look at the waveforms that we record? Some of the newer areas, these are obviously more expensive areas and are going to be limited by our resources. We have a project co-located with us in Columbia at the University of South Carolina looking at high-definition ERP. We are seeing some very promising evidence coming out of this already, in that we are seeing brainwave patterns that differ when a person is asked to lie and when a person is asked to tell the truth. P300 research has been going on for a number of years. Some of the projects that are out there now are supported by the government. Others are supported by other institutions. Thermal imaging analysis is something that's exciting right now. We are partnering with the Mayo Clinic and Honeywell Technologies in this, and we are seeing some exciting things and not for any other reason than it's the truth. It's starting to match up with something called the microexpression. This is totally non-invasive and may allow us to add, in the near future, an additional channel for recording to what we do. Laser Doppler vibrometry, voice analysis. These again are looking at the less invasive techniques. Is there a way to record some of the information that we currently get in a less invasive way? Why don't we skip up a little bit? We can, if you go through this, just describe some of the ways that we're trying to improve our stuff. I will say that in the last 2 years, we have increased the number of outside universities and laboratories from four to the current university that you see here and the street that you see here. So we are, as fast as humanly possible, expanding our base of research. It is important that we have the objective research done by these institutes outside of downtown, not only because they have laboratories that we cannot afford, but because they provide objective evidence. If I could spend just another minute or two talking about what we currently know. Accuracy rates and polygraphs. There are two different areas. We've already heard about that this morning, the law enforcement area, the specific issue. The past research, as you will see, primarily, I think these rates are coming from OPA, 80-95% accurate in terms of specific issues. In the intelligence screening, we drop down a little bit, and I think it's obvious why. We are dealing with multiple issues. It becomes more difficult to try and assess the true actors. Next. Go ahead. This is what the DOD would call the utility information. Again, we don't have access to this. The rows that I have highlighted in red would be called the false positive area. Over the last 3 years, nearly, I think, in excess of 23,000 exams administered by the DOD, we have a false positive rate of less than 1%. We have accuracy rates with no reportable information on the first series exceeding 97%. Next chart. This is difficult to read. These are the studies that we'll be happy to provide to you. These are the screening studies done by the DOTI over the past several years. As you get into these studies, you will start to discover that the difficulties in designing a study that can actually answer the accuracy questions. The far right-hand column is the one with most interest. That's where the 65-90% comes from. And these are the accuracy rates on the outcome, knowing the ground truth. I'll take the rest of my time and just talk about something that's going on at DOTI beginning next Monday. What we call the Screening Validation Methods Project. If you were to commission a study to be done to look at outcome of screening exams, this is probably the project you would ask for. This project has been more than a year in the making. It has more external reviews, vetting through the federal government to try and ensure the methodology is clean as it can possibly be, and to meet all the questions that we have been asked in the past about how do we assess the true accuracy of screening methods. I invite each and every one of you to come within the month of February and March to see the project. We have the capability of observing the project and while it's being conducted, to how we program our subjects, what acts are they asked to commit, and how do we then run them through the polygraph process that they would be adhering to in the federal government. The methodology here, we're going to try to control for every variable possible. Obviously, some of the ones that are most difficult to control for are examiners and how they do. We have asked the examiners not to apply all that they have been trained to do, but to only apply what the research protocol allows us to do in the conduct of the examiner. We are also assessing accuracy at the end of the process, which has never been done before. All of the studies that you will see about past research look at accuracy as the outcome after a series of charts. That is not the way it's practiced in the federal government. It has to go through quality control processes and steps before a call is actually made. This project is the first time we've met that challenge, and if you're not able to come down during the project, certainly we'll be glad to brief you on the full details of the project at any time. I apologize for taking too much time.
That's terrific. Thank you. Let me just, John?
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask if the committee has
a question.
Committee had questions with the.
One of the questions has to do with the kind of call the examiner makes and how this affects the accuracy estimates. As I understand it, they might say yes, no, or doubtful, inconclusive.
We call it a no opinion.
No opinion, okay. The accuracy rates that are quoted, 90% and so forth, are independent. They ignore, in effect, how many no opinion decisions are made.
The chart that I provided has the accuracy rates for with and without no opinion.
And how do you compute the accuracy rates with the no opinions taken into account?
I'm hoping that this panel can provide us with some suggestions on are we doing it correctly, but the types of statistical analysis that we use is the standard in the industry. But we do have a difficult question when we're trying to look at categorical data. Is there a way? And I know that in other types of research, there is a way to upfront identify those cases that will be dropped. We do not have a way of doing that at this point. If we could, then we probably wouldn't have the issue with no opinion.
Well, just 2 points, quickly. The accuracy rates that depend on just the calls, as opposed to ignore the no-call data, are high, as you understand, because the examiner is deciding which exams he or she wants to be graded on, right? So no call is a way of saying these are too difficult for me to call, and I don't want to be my percentages. So depending on how many of those I might have.
Yeah.
But the other point, a more positive point, if the examiner were to, I think we'll pursue this and make rate in, say, 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 categories instead of 3 or 4. In other words, try to divide up those more calls into